You're listening to The Ground Floor on the Jefferson Exchange, where we talk with entrepreneurs at all stages of their businesses, from startup through exit. I'm your host, Cynthia Scherr, and today I'm interviewing someone who combined his interests, education, and expertise to start and then ultimately exit a business, and who still pursues his entrepreneurial passion for fungi. My guest today is Dr. Mike Amaranthus, and he has a PhD in soil science and is the founder of Mycorrhizal Applications in Grants Pass. Welcome to the podcast, Mike.
Thanks, Cynthia.
So we're going to hear about the history of your company from startup to exit, which I understand spanned 20 years. You sold the company in 2015, is that right?
We did. Well, yeah, Sumitomo of Japan purchased it in 2015.
Okay, well, let's back up a little bit and just get clear on the first word in the company's name, because that goes by really fast on the air. So for our listeners, Mycorrhizal, spelled M-Y-C-O-R-R-H-I-Z-A-L, it's an adjective, and I'd like to move to the noun so that you can describe what is mycorrhiza.
Well, it literally means fungus root. Mycor means fungus and rhizal means root. And it describes this ancient relationship between plants and fungi, which allowed fungi and plants to, in a synergistic way, colonize the Earth's surface.
And so how did you get introduced to mycorrhiza and why? What was the source?
Yeah, very, very indirectly. I was back when the woolly mammoths roamed the Rogue Valley, I came up from UC Berkeley in the late 70s, and I was a soil scientist. And one of my first assignments was to help with the reforestation program. Back then, the Forest Service, the BLM, and private lands were doing a lot of clear cutting. So the Pacific Northwest region was really growing over 100 million tree seedlings. And I was helping with the Oregon part of that. And we were growing these trees and in these nurseries. And they weren't doing very well. They were stunted, uneven growth, really terrible root systems. And we were trying to grow them like corn. We were putting massive amounts of chemical fertilizers and pesticides on these trees. And once we outplanted them in the forest, the harsh environment of these steep, rocky lands, the trees, a lot of them died, and the survival rate was less than 50%. So the program really wasn't doing very well. And so we kept asking the experts, you know, what can we do at the nursery to make these trees survive better? And we kept getting the same response from all the conventional people that were trying to help us grow these trees, the technical people. And they would just say, add more fertilizer, or add more fungicides, or add more, you know, all of these inputs, these chemical synthetic inputs. And over a period of 2 or 3 years, things didn't get better. So finally, I was desperate. And somebody told me about this older professor at Oregon State University named Jim Trappe. And so I just called him out of the blue. I got his name and I just called him. He answered the phone and he goes, oh, it sounds like a mycorrhizal problem. Go out in the woods and you collect these truffles and these puffballs and these mushrooms, put them in a blender, dilute them with water and spray them over the trees and they'll grow great. And I thought, who is this kooky guy? I've never heard anything from anybody. I didn't even know what mycorrhizal meant. And this is kind of a scary word. It's difficult to spell.
It is.
But I was desperate. And so I found some colleagues and my wife, and we went out in the woods and he helped us ID which ones we were supposed to collect. And sure enough, we put them in a blender, diluted them with water, and sprayed them over the trees. And they started to grow normally.
Huh.
And the root systems were fabulous. Instead of, you know, 3 or 4 feeder roots on a tree, we had thousands of feeder roots on these trees. And the bottom line is when we outplanted them out into the forest, we went from under 50% survival to over 90% survival. So it was a real lesson for me, something I knew absolutely nothing about. I started to do a lot of my own research on these fungi with Jim Trappe's help. And when he got a National Science Foundation grant to do a practical application project for forestry. He hired me to be his PhD student, and that's kind of how I got started. I knew absolutely nothing about this subject. Just kind of serendipity got involved.
Oh, that's fascinating. And so you started out working, it sounds like, were you working with the Forest Service when you were working with all those seedlings?
Yeah, as a scientist. Yeah.
As a scientist. So you're working as a scientist with a foreign Forest Service, and then you went and got a PhD. And then what prompted you to pursue a commercial application of mycorrhizae, I think is the right, am I saying that right?
Mycorrhizae is plural. Mycorrhizae is singular, but the fact that you can even pronounce this tells me lots, Cynthia. You've done your homework, so that's awesome. What prompted me? Well, I was a researcher, and I had this soil productivity program, research program for the Pacific Northwest. And as part of that program, we were looking at soil health and soil productivity. And of course, the mycorrhizal fungi are a big part of that, because about 85% of the world's plants form this mycorrhizal relationship. Mycorrhizae are as common to the roots of plants as chloroplasts, the photosynthetic energy sources from plant leaves, are. So they're very common. They're more the rule and not the exceptions. It's a big part of soil health. And fortunately, there was a really great program at Oregon State University, and the U.S. Forest Service had a research lab at Oregon State in Corvallis as well. So that combination of this wealth of knowledge, it was sort of my part of the research group, even though I supervised the broader soil productivity group. And I enjoyed it so much. That's what, rather than supervising the other scientists, I really enjoyed doing my own research and producing fungal inoculum. For all the experiments that were going on, not only in North America, but in places all over the world, I was producing the inoculum for these studies for my collaborators. So I really found that I enjoyed that. I wanted to do something with my hands. I wanted to get out in the field and actually do research. So, and again, I had a lot of really great colleagues that were also very interested in this. So it was this great, group of, we created our own sort of energy around this subject and did a lot of the early research on mycorrhizae.
Huh. Wow. That's a very impressive start. You're listening to The Ground Floor on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Cynthia Scher, and my guest today is Dr. Mike Amaranthus, founder of Mycorrhizal Applications in Grants Pass. So it sounds like you got a group of people together. Were you able to patent a product, or how did the company actually start? And was this a HP story where it started in your garage, or what did it start
literally,
in the forest?
Literally in my garage in Grants Pass. So my wife was a big part of, just sort of providing energy and expertise. She had quite a lot of business experience, so she helped a lot with the business part of it. But we literally started in the backyard, and we collected fungi mostly for forestry. And different trees got different types of mycorrhizae, and we would specialize, inoculum liquids for people like Weyerhaeuser, International Paper, Georgia Pacific, a lot of big tree nurseries. And we would actually run the mycorrhizal spores, which are the seeds of the mycorrhizal fungi. We'd make these slurries, and they'd actually run it through their irrigation systems. So they could literally inoculate millions of trees in 5 to 7 minutes. And basically the spores would rain down, the seeds of the mycorrhiza would rain down. Now the mycorrhizae need energy from the plants to germinate and grow. So the plants provide the sugars, which cause the mycorrhizal seeds to germinate and grow and latch onto the roots and then grow into the surrounding soil. And in exchange, the mycorrhizal fungus, which are these threads in the soil, in exchange, they forage through the soil material for water and nutrients to give back to the plant. So both the plant and the fungus benefit from the relationship. And it's been around 460 million years. In fact, there were no land plants before there were mycorrhizal fungi. It was the this marriage of fungus and plant that allowed plants to leave aquatic environments and colonize the relatively harsh Earth surface. So it's been around for 460 million years.
So it almost sounds like you get a history in evolution by studying mycorrhizae.
Yeah, and I didn't invent anything. Basically, my colleagues and myself, we just sort of tried to mimic, you know, how the natural world, how plants feed themselves.
So was it? Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
But, no, so, was there anything proprietary about what you did? I mean, you're making it sound like you didn't invent anything, but you did manage to, you know, launch a company that distributed this product. So where's the bridge from that?
We figured out which fungi went with each plant. Some fungi are generalists where they form with a lot of different kinds of plants, but some are better at getting phosphorus out of the soil. Some are better at uptaking nitrogen. Some mycorrhizae are better at drought protection. Some are better at increasing growth, protecting against pathogens. So identifying the characteristics of which fungi went with each plant. And then the other thing we did as we expanded from forestry to agriculture and horticulture is that we grew endomycorrhizal fungi, which are different than the forestry fungi. So we grew these, a different type of mycorrhizae that went with corn, soybeans, all these important tomatoes, all these important agricultural plants. So we were able to grow those in big bags, which was pretty, for the time, pretty proprietary and pretty unique. So we would basically grow these fungi in these thousand pound bags.
And so this is, as you said, this is an ancient relationship between fungi and the below the ground and the above the ground plants in some ways. Was there competition?
There was not a lot of competition. Because people really hadn't gathered these fungi and figured out how to grow them themselves. There was a few companies, but they were smaller and they were very limited in their scope in terms of what plants they could inoculate. So we were the first to really do it in a large way. And basically, we looked to nature for some help in terms of determining which kinds of fungi went with different kinds of plants. So we would look at natural ecosystems to see which species were thriving in those environments, and then we would learn how to grow them. You know, if you went to a redwood stand, you look at, say you go to Crescent City, Humboldt, Stout Grove, trees are 8 foot in diameter, 300 feet tall, thousands of years old. They've never been fertilized. They've never been artificially irrigated. They haven't had pesticides. And these are the most productive ecosystems on Earth. So a lot of our natural systems are very resilient, very productive, without a lot of inputs, with very little inputs other than what nature provides. And that's because they have this robust biological system below the ground, which is helping them survive stress, improve growth, et cetera. So basically we learned from nature, but learning how to grow those in Grants Pass, for example. We also grew material in St. Louis. We were partners in a plant in India. So we were growing these in all these different locations, and sometimes in a lab environment, but sometimes in an outside environment as well. So to be able to take that knowledge from nature and apply it to more of a domesticated farm situation was part of the solution.
So you said you expanded internationally and did you have labs or subsidiaries or just suppliers who were in India and in other parts of the U.S.?
Well, we needed lab support. The St. Louis facility was, we needed a bigger lab space, and it was part of the Danforth Center in St. Louis, which is kind of a famous plant science center. Mm-hmm. And so we just bought a bunch of lab space and hired some scientists. So that's when we learned how to grow the mycorrhizae in a lab environment that's super concentrated. So that environment was, we could produce mycorrhizal inoculum that was 1,000 or 10,000 times more concentrated than what we could do outside.
Huh. So lots of inventors and scientists launch companies and then have to figure out how to run a successful company. So what were some of the things that you learned about what it takes to run a successful company?
I learned to ask my wife.
So tell me a little bit about her role in the founding of the company.
She was exceptional in terms of, because we were constantly buying, new land. We needed more space. So we're buying land, we're buying places to mix the mycorrhiza, to formulate the mycorrhiza. We needed office space. So we were buying, a lot of properties. And she was really good at that. She also managed the workforce. So we were adding new people, new expertise, HR specialists, all those kinds of things. So she handled all of that. Yeah, she was instrumental in the ability of the company to grow so rapidly, over that 10-year period.
And what did you learn about each other from working together? Lots of small businesses start with family members or couples running a business together.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really, really good question. I think what we learned is just to give the other person a lot of space. Just know that they're competent. She was very good at running the business side of things, and I was very good at doing the studies and, the product innovation and all those kinds of things. So we just supported each other, basically. And back then, there wasn't a lot of regulation or registration issues surrounding the products, and those grew every year as people became more. So we had to bring on product specialists and registration people and regulation people. And we wrote a lot of the rules surrounding, some of these mycorrhizal biologics, how you measure them, how you count them, what are things that are compatible, other practices with those. So we had to evolve a lot of that too. So in those early days, it was really exciting.
I bet it was.
Yeah, it was just really exciting. And I think over that time period, we just learned to trust each other and each other's judgment.
And then you managed to scale from there. And then, 20 years later, you decided to exit the company. But, was that a difficult decision to decide that, okay, we've taken it this far, this is where we've done our 20 years? Or, what were some of the components in that exit decision?
Well, part of it was finding the right company that could take it over, that would keep, basically our employees, keep the vision, believed in biologicals. There's a lot of, we had people like Monsanto interested in and offered to purchase our company. But they were very chemistry oriented, and the fear was they would just buy us and shut us down because we were competition. Mm-hmm. So we wanted a company that really believed in biological solutions, that wanted to keep our facilities going in like places like Grants Pass, St. Louis and India, and wanted to continue that kind of vision for biological solutions to environmental problems.
So was it a difficult decision? Was there a turning point after 20 years that said, okay, it's time? Or were you starting to get offers and you thought, yeah, we could exit at this point?
It was the complexity and the size of the kinds of things that we were doing. We were selling mycorrhizal products to 40 countries. And so just the regulatory registration aspects of that was just huge. And also, we needed a company that had offices in a lot of these countries, because rather than having to travel to Malaysia or China or, South America to put in a study, if you had offices, a company that already had offices and staff in those places, it's just a lot easier to do business when you have offices in those countries. So we were looking for somebody that had that international. It really felt like we had an idea that was global. And we had a lot of environmental issues that were global. So we were looking for companies that had that kind of expertise that were placed in these countries so they could work in these countries seamlessly rather than trying to do it from Grants Pass. Have you ever tried to fly from Medford to a place like Singapore? It's just like crazy.
As
like
a matter of fact, I have. Yes.
It's crazy. The travel was just nuts.
Yes. You can't get there from here. Well, you can, but it takes a lot of hours.
It was really wearing us out too.
Yeah. And
so we were, so at that point, and then my wife and I both stayed on for a while, for a couple of years for the transition. And that was good partly because you know, you helped with the transition, but in a lot of cases, just your ego is so tied up in the business. It was good to slowly let that go where you're not the decision maker. You provide input, but it's not ultimately your decision. So that was something that took a while to develop, you know, where you just were sort of a consultant for your own company, which your own ex company, I should say. So that, you know, that part of it is difficult to let go.
I'm sure I hear that from people all the time. It's very hard to let go of something that's been your life for 20 years. So the international aspect can be challenging running a company from Southern Oregon. What were some of the advantages of running the company from Grants Pass?
The people are great, and the environment to live here is fantastic. I mean, Southern Oregon is really rich with fungi. Yeah, that's what we were doing. We have so many different types of ecosystems here. So you've got all of the fungal components here, which is really quite a treasure chest of fungal treasures in our own area to borrow from and to learn from. So it's a very mycologically rich area, which was for start. And then the people love the outdoors. It's easy to get people to do field trials. You know, everybody wanted to be outside, you know, working. And it was an ideal place, a great place to raise a family. We have 5 kids, affordable for our employees, and a lot of benefits.
That's great. A big booster of people starting companies in Southern Oregon. I'm curious, because this does happen to a lot of companies. Did the company ever have a near-death experience?
Me? I got cancer. I got diagnosed with esophageal cancer. And I wouldn't have put the company out, but it certainly would have put my part of the company out. But that was in 2009. And I'm happy to say I'm a survivor and doing well and functioning well. But yeah, that was a scare for, I think, for all of us, including the people that were employees, wondering, you know, what was next.
I have no doubt that's always really scary when something threatens the leader. You're listening to The Ground Floor on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Cynthia Scherr, and my guest today is Dr. Mike Amaranthus, the founder of Mycorrhizal Applications in Grants Pass. Very, very happy to hear that you are that many years with cancer behind you. And so that seems like one large dose of probably luck, medicine, everything else, food, whatever helped keep you going. But how else might luck have played a role in your success?
Oh, I think we were lucky to be able to draw from so much expertise from that Corvallis group. Mm-hmm. They were both Forest Service scientists and university scientists. It was a core group, so you just didn't have one or two scientists working on mycorrhiza. There was literally a dozen scientists and their staff working on these fungi. I always had somebody I could talk to, rely on. And we were more than just business, you know, or academic. You know, a lot of us, we had traveled together, you know, finding these fungi all over the world. So we were really pretty close friends. It was really fun to work in that group. It was a sort of a magical time for mycorrhizal research. When we started, everybody thought mycorrhizae were pathogens. They'd see them growing on the roots. And there's this real fungal phobia going on. You see a fungus growing on a roof, it's got to be something that's going to harm the plant. But as it turned out, it was basically the stomach of the plant, because those fine filaments, there's a tablespoon of healthy soil can have several miles of these mycorrhizal filaments. That's sort of the roots on the roots that actually feed the plant from the soil. And to be part of that discovery period of the benefits of these things and the fat, you know, there are literally thousands of species of these things in the Pacific Northwest alone. You know, it was just really fun to be working in a cooperative way with other scientists.
Nice. I mean, it sounds like both your industry and your personality were very conducive to building networks.
And, you know, there's a lesson here, too, about funding research, because the basic research that was supplied by these institutions, and most of that was, you know, money from National Science Foundation grants, writing grants from different kinds of sources, the ability of them to source those financial resources to do the research, you know, it's launched what is now a $1 billion industry globally. So it was important to have that basic science information to help people like me develop the business.
But yes, so important. And some things happen through serendipity and some things happen through following a concerted path. But absolutely, basic research is fundamental to our economy.
I think so.
Yeah. I know some entrepreneurs have trouble sort of finding their path after they exit a company. And I know you've been able to pursue your passion and have recently written a book. Tell us a little bit about what you have done since selling mycorrhizal applications.
Well, the book is called Fry, Thrive, or Die. And
it's say that slowly again, because I love the title.
It's called Fry, Thrive, or Die. And it's a fun pocket guide to Western mushrooms, basically. So it's something you can take out in the woods, throw in your back pocket. And it identifies the fry species, which are the good edible ones, the thrive ones, which are the medicinal mushrooms that you hear so much about these days. And then the die ones, of course, the poisonous lookalikes that you have to avoid. So I even have some of the fly mushrooms, the psychedelic ones in there as well. But it's a fun pocket guide. It's more than just a ID book. It's, you know, how to find them in the habitat, what time of year to look for mushrooms, how to identify them, how to dry them, how to cook them. It's kind of a comprehensive look, and it's a fun guide. It's got a lot of local stories. A lot of Southern Oregon pictures in there. It's pretty fun.
That's great. And where can people find that? Again, you know, the it's a pocket guide to 50 common fungi in the Western United States. Where can they find that?
So REI picked up the book for all the Western states. So in the Western United States, it's REI stores. But locally, most of the local bookstores carry the book. I mean, Northwest Nature Shop in Ashland, The Grange, most of the nurseries, Oregon Books, Amazon has the book. It's been quite popular. It's a little bit unorthodox. A lot of the old guides didn't really cover medicinal mushrooms at all. So it's got a lot of the latest medicinal information on which mushrooms are better for, say, blood sugar, brain comprehension, and all the science that's been done in the last 30 years.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, you know, what a journey from growing trees better to reforest clear cuts all the way up to foraging for your own fungi in our Pacific Northwest forests. So thank you so much for being our guest today. Learned so much about your history, how you grew the company, and then how you continued that passion beyond running a company. And I know people can look you up on your website, Dr. Mike Amaranth, where you also have a lot of information about fungi and how they're used.
Yeah, frythriveordie.com. It's got all kinds of recipes. It's got all the latest medicinal information about mushrooms and a lot about how the way that fungi help the ecosystem. So that's a good way for people to access more information.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Mike, for taking the time to speak with us on the show today.
Thank you, Cynthia.
You've been listening to The Ground Floor on the Jefferson Exchange. My name is Cynthia Scherr, and you can find this and other episodes of The Ground Floor at jeffexchange.org and on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.